Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here, 101.3 KPCG online, kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. This is Trumpet Radio Live, the weekend edition. A lot to talk about on today's program. The United States is hitting Iran with new sanctions. Details about that. Also, a return to temperance. Are we going to see that in the United States? Good write-up about that. Also, who will protect Nigeria's northern Christians? A lot going on over there. And also, the happiest states in America in 2016. We've got the list. That and more. Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. Don't forget about the TuneIn app, too. That's a good place to listen if you'd like to, and other locations as well. This is Trumpet Radio Live. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. You can follow us online at kpcg.fm, where the archives are. Also, if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm, and email us any comments you have. Comments at kpcg.fm, and I will take a look at those for you. It's the weekend edition. Week just flew by, Grant. It's over. It's done, almost.
It did. It went by really, really, really fast, and I wasn't here for Monday, so it went by even faster.
It's a good sign, because it means you're busy. You had stuff to do, got things done, hopefully, or slept a lot. I'm not sure which one of those.
Probably the second one a little bit more so.
It is always a strange feeling when you get sick, and you're home during the workday.
Yeah.
And it just feels strange, especially if you're to the point where you can kind of focus on other things. The illness isn't, you know, super, super severe. But, yeah, the day just drags. It feels odd. Mm-hmm. There are TV shows on that you didn't know existed. Talk shows about cooking.
Yeah.
Shows about cooking where they talk about politics. It's a whole different world.
That's really true. My wife has actually gotten into Rachel Ray a lot recently, so that kind of hits home for me.
she's a chef extraordinaire, I guess.
Pretty amazing. I guess she has simplistic ingredients, but she does a pretty good job.
Yeah, I even know who that is.
Yeah.
I don't know much about cooking, but I do know who that is. Some headlines to talk about today. This is one of the big ones. The U.S., this is from Fox News, U.S. hits 13 people, dozens of companies, in new Iran sanctions. The Trump administration is imposing sanctions on 13 people and dozens of companies in response to Iran's recent ballistic missile test. The Treasury Department announced the action Friday. The President Donald Trump's National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn, said this week that the administration was putting Iran, quote, on notice for its missile test Sunday and for supporting Shiite rebels in Yemen. And he could have added just being generally bad people and destroying the world with terrorism, but he didn't include that. The government, anyway. I'm sure there's some people that would prefer not to be under that government, but they don't have a choice. Trump tweeted Friday that, quote, Iran is playing with fire. They don't appreciate how kind President Obama was to them, not me. And so then here come the sanctions. So it's a tweet storm between the president and Iran. They're tweeting back and forth.
That's just such a funny way to see international politics progress now with tweets. I love Mr. Trump's Twitter feed because he doesn't have any advertisers he's trying to promote with his tweets. He just says what's on his mind, and he says it pretty articulately, actually.
Yeah, and he says anyway that he feels he needs to do that because the press won't give him a fair they won't fairly represent what he has said. Mm-hmm. They'll distort it in some way, which I believe to be true. So he puts it out there on his own on Twitter, for better or for worse. So they are taking a little more serious action with these sanctions against Iran. In a related note, I'd recommend you check out thetrumpet.com. There's a write-up there, an analysis piece. Donald Trump puts Iran on notice. It's from the 2nd of February. From Brent Noctegal, who is over there in Jerusalem, not too far away from Iran. The White House has issued a warning to Tehran following Sunday's ballistic missile test, and he has an analysis piece on that. So check that out. Good to see some of those analysis pieces there on thetrumpet.com. Give you some insight into what's going on. But Iran hasn't had sanctions for a while. They're used to getting pallets of cash from the U.S., so this is different.
Iran really should have known better when Mr. Trump took office that we weren't just going to keep handing them gifts, and yet they decided to set off a ballistic missile on Sunday. Not the best move.
They're testing.
Yeah.
They're testing to see what the U.S. will do, and so sanctions for now, and who knows beyond that, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. Definitely a different policy there.
You know what's interesting, too, is every single time Iran sets off a missile, they say they weren't breaking the deal. So I just have no idea what the deal even is anymore.
Nobody knows. It's one of the great mysteries. The number one, Bigfoot. Number two, the Bermuda Triangle. Three, the Iran nuclear agreement.
Yeah.
In some order. The unsolved mysteries of our time. And what's at Area 51?
Yes.
So all of that's mixed together on the next edition of Art Bell's show, for those that have ever listened to him. I don't even know if he's still on radio. He used to do weird overnight shows about all sorts of things, including aliens and Bermuda Triangle. And every once in a while, he throws some politics in there.
Probably had high ratings, knowing how our listeners usually get interested in things.
Oh, yeah, he did, for sure. I think he was, he'd always say something like, you know, he was broadcasting from his secret bunker in Area 51 or something. The only reason I have any idea who he is because when I was working at a different radio station, there was two stations in the building, an FM and an AM. And I worked at the AM side, or the FM side, rather. But anytime I walked by the AM side, you could hear what they were playing.
Mm.
And they were always playing these national talk shows. And he'd be on, and if I was working a late shift, you know, you'd walk by and you'd be like, what was that? You know, you'd hear something, you'd go listen, and Art Bell was talking.
Yeah, it's strangely enthralling. Even if you don't think that there's a bunker in Area 51, you still need to listen in and see what he's talking about.
Yeah, he had a way of drawing people in there. So it was 2 a.m, you know, it kind of throws you off a little bit. Here's one of the other big headlines from recently here. The Sun has this: terror at the Louvre. Dramatic moment they show where soldiers shoot Louvre terror suspect seconds after he stabbed a trooper with a machete while shouting Allah Akbar in front of terrified tourists. As you can imagine, we had news updates on this, of course. The attacker was blasted 5 times, they say, in the legs and stomach as he lashed out at guards. So they're still finding out more information about this. France has been targeted recently. And this is not a huge attack in the sense of a lot of people injured, but certainly scares people, tourists and everybody else, if you're stuck there at the Louvre.
Yeah, apparently the police and the military acted in a pretty admirable way. They took care of the threat very quickly. It just makes you wonder, when are the policymakers going to start making some serious changes to deal with the enemy that's within more efficiently?
Well, earlier this week, Angela Merkel, she was in this back and forth. I forget who it was with. It was with another leader of, I want to say Turkey maybe, but I'd have to go back and check the details. Anyway, it was an argument about how Germany was referring to terrorism. I think maybe they said Islamic terrorism or something. And so here's Angela Merkel defending herself, saying, no, you know, we love the Muslims and we want to work with them, and trying to defend herself over the terminology. And then, you know, a day or so later, you've got more attacks. You just can't, they can't keep up that line of trying to say that the terrorism is not motivated in some sense by Islam. And then the next day or the day after, you have another attack where they're yelling, you know, Allah Akbar. At some point, people just had enough of that, I think.
Yeah, and it is a common myth believed by millions of people, if not more than that worldwide, that you can't attach terrorism to a religion. I was talking about yesterday how one of my friends works with a liberal at work who thinks the same thing. You can't attach terrorism to a religion, even though they specifically several decades ago developed terrorism as a tactic to push their religion. I mean, that is absolutely something that ties back to the religion of Islam.
Yeah, you can only walk that line for so long of trying to say it's not related to a religious belief, but it keeps going back to that. So that's another thing. So we'll see how that develops over there in Europe, and that happened, of course, over there at the Louvre. They had, a live report this morning from one of the major networks, and there's a lot of students there from, I think it was Georgia, University of Georgia, and they were in the building at the time, so they were highlighting that because of the U.S. connection. But they were looking at the Mona Lisa when it all happened. So that'll be a memory they'll carry with them for a long time. Kind of strange. They won't think of the Mona Lisa the same.
Well, maybe they'll come back to America as our messengers, giving us warning not to allow 8 million Muslims here as France did.
It is tough to continue to defend the policies of just kind of opening your borders while you're being attacked. So we'll see how that develops. And, of course, there'll be good updates about all of that at thetrumpet.com and some good analysis pieces about some of those major trends. They have a list here of the happiest states in 2016. So this is based on interviewing some people, taking a survey, finding out what they think. It's interesting to note the happiest state versus the unhappiest state, the difference is not that much. The highest score you can get is 100 for a happiness level. The happiest state had 65.2. And the absolutely lowest state had 58.9. So we're not talking about 100 and, you know, 6.
That's kind of strange, actually. You'd think everyone would at least be up in the 90s or the 80s.
Yeah.
In America, of all places. Maybe we just can't relate well enough to what's going on in other parts of the world.
Yeah. Everybody, if you look at the percentage, it's like, kind of happy. Sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Happiest, well, we'll give just a few of them here. We'll give you the whole list. But the least happiest state, I'll give you a guess. What do you think it is?
New Jersey?
West Virginia.
Ooh.
Only 58.9. Well, I don't know exactly how they're grading it, but their happiness level is 58.9 out of 100.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky at 49. They're the second least happiest. And then the third least happiest is us. It's Oklahoma.
No way.
It's what they say.
It can't be.
How is that true? There's a lot of happy people here. Cowboys? You know, when have you seen a sad cowboy? Very rarely.
That's true. Well, the thing is, we get a lot of people who move here or they're visiting here and they say, oh, there's nothing in Oklahoma. So maybe that just rubs off on us after a while.
It could be. It might be, you know, obviously, let's say you've got like a really fantastic beach or something like that. Yeah, that makes you a little happier, I guess. People don't like the wind? They don't want the dusty winds? That doesn't make people happy? I don't know. So that's where we fit in on the list here. That's, of course, we're broadcasting from Edmond, Oklahoma area. With my home state of Wisconsin, 28, right in the middle, like we always are. Never the top, never the bottom, right in the middle. Hey, one year, University of Wisconsin was ranked the best party school in America.
Right.
And by best, it means worst.
Right.
So,
as in most destructive.
Most destructive. So we have that going for us. But even we lost that to somebody in Florida. They're always Florida's always coming for us.
Florida always has a lot of party schools.
Yeah, so we couldn't hold that spot for too long. Some of the other ones to note here, Texas comes in at number 10. They're the 10th happiest. How's that? How can Texas be number 10 and Oklahoma be so far down? I mean, we're right next to each other.
We're almost like a miniature version of Texas. So much is similar, I would say.
You said you're gonna take a trip down to Texas here next couple of days. I want, when you cross that state line, I want you to think about if you're getting happier.
The grass is greener.
Yeah.
The sky is a little bit brighter.
You just get happier all of a sudden. You cross the border. That's what they say.
I'll come back with a report on Monday. We'll see how it goes.
Your happiness level. Yeah. Top five here, the happiest states. Number five, Colorado. Number four, Maine. Number three, South Dakota. Oh, come on. I've been to South Dakota. There is literally nothing there.
Well, that's what we were joking about before we came on, is the places with the lowest population, the fewer people with whom to have a scuffle,
yeah,
then possibly they're a little bit happier.
The happier you are, yeah. Number two is Alaska. Mm-hmm. There's nobody in Alaska. It's just the bears.
Exactly.
The bears and the wolves and happy people. And number one is Hawaii. Probably not a surprise. It's beautiful. So
detached from the rest of us, we seem to have problems here that don't necessarily spread all the way down to Hawaii.
Yeah, so they're the happiest state apparently. So I, you know, it is what it is.
Where is Old Ride in California on there?
Oh, that's a good question. 13.
Okay. Well,
Massachusetts 14 and Florida's 11. So you know, you could figure if you're going to the coasts, you'd probably be a little happier in general.
Oh yeah, there's so much just physically that would offset some other things there.
Yeah. So it's funny. Virginia is 21, and then West Virginia is the least happiest. So I don't know. Something up there. You've been talking the last few days about our good friend, Spurs basketball coach, Greg Popovich.
No way. Did he seriously start talking about Mr. Trump again?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No, he's on to other things. Well, no, he did talk about him, but he's on to other things here. He opened up finally. Finally, Greg has opened up about a few things.
What?
Yeah. So, and you dubbed him Grumpy Greg. Is that your own creation or just somebody else?
That's an original, and I also have Stupid Steve for Steve Kerr.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's interesting because they're basketball coaches, and that's, I guess, their area of expertise, and yet they feel the need to chime in on other things.
Even though basketball is pretty much about the most simplistic thing you could ever be an expert in. Coach it, just to realize how to put a ball through a hoop better than the other team can.
Greg Popovich, this is from the website Ball Don't Lie.
It doesn't.
And that's an old Rasheed Wallace quote, because when he used to get called for a foul that he didn't agree with, which was every foul he committed, and the player would shoot the free throw and miss, he'd yell, "Ball don't lie."
He's been ejected for that.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
So it's become its own thing. Because of his bad attitude. This is the headline. Greg Popovich opens up on Black History Month, white privilege, and our national sin. So here comes Greg Popovich.
Here we go.
Yeah, here's a couple of his quotes. He says, "But more than anything, I think if people take the time to think about it, I think it is our national sin. It always intrigues me when people come out with, quote, 'I'm tired of talking about that,' in relation to race, I guess. Or do we have to talk about race again?" And he says the answer is, you're bleeping right, we do, because it's always there and it's systematic. And he goes on and on. And so he's getting involved in this. And I think what's really difficult about this, or why this probably would rub a lot of people the wrong way, is that he's trying to continually bring up something that he thinks is a problem. And there is some problem there, but he has no solutions. He offers no answers. He doesn't know what to do about anything, but he just wants to sit there and keep talking about the problem. And I think that makes him an agitator, because if you bring up a problem, even if it is there is a legitimate problem there, but you have no solution to it, what value is it? And that's, I think, why people might say, why we keep talking about it. Because he's not bringing any solution to it. Is he willing, or anybody, forget this guy in particular, but people that want to bring up any problem, whether it's race or anything else, the question is, do they want to look and see what the Bible says is the answer? And then, do they want to do that? Because if you don't, well, where do we go from here?
We're just going to keep talking in circles. Grumpy Greg needs to take a step back and look at who I'm sure is his hero, Mr. Obama. I don't think I'm really going out on a limb too much to say that. Mr. Obama made it a point to talk about race pretty much all the time, to really come across as anti-police in any of these situations with Black men getting shot. Did that make race relations better? Did talking about it all the time actually help the situation? Doesn't seem like it. Talking about it, okay, maybe trying to be understanding of everyone else's situation is good to a point, but then you start to just exacerbate the issue when you start hammering people over the head just because you're going to say they're racist. You think because they disagree with you that they are racist? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and he has no solution. Do they want to look at what God's word says about the way to get along, about keeping the law? I don't think so. And so what's the value in it? You know, it would be like somebody that knows nothing about the way to build the building. You could sit there as that person and see, like, a building has got a crack in its foundation, and you could keep pointing at it like, well, look at that. But if you don't know how to fix it, at some point, why do you keep talking about it? You got to find the solution, or otherwise you just become that irritating person that keeps pointing at the obvious issue.
While the builders are there actually trying to fix it, and they're getting irritated by the guy who keeps talking about it the whole time.
Yeah, well, there's a crack there. Yeah, there is. Do you know how to fix it? No. Well, then, okay.
Move on. It's completely a pointless thing for him to be talking about. Somehow he just thinks he's an expert in every field just because he's a good basketball coach.
I think he's an agitator because he has no solution. And I think if the solution was presented to him, I think he'd reject it.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing when you see the radical left trying to get rid of all Christian influence in the country. Where do you turn then for principles that can actually give you a solution? The Bible is now discredited in their eyes, so we can't turn to the Bible, which would tell us exactly what to do.
He had one other, well, he had quite a few quotes, but one other one here. This is Greg Popovich, coach of the San Antonio Spurs. He says, if you were born white, you automatically have a monstrous advantage. Did he just call white people monsters? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, that's exactly how the media would twist that if they didn't like him.
Took it out of context. He says, if you were born white, you automatically have a monstrous advantage. Educationally, economically, culturally, in this society, and all the systematic roadblocks that exist. Whether it's in a judicial sense, a neighborhood sense with laws, zoning, education, we have huge problems in that regard that are very complicated. True enough. He says, but take leadership time and real concern to try to solve. It's a tough one because people don't really want to face it. I don't know that people don't want to face it. I think what they don't want to face anymore, one, is people like him talking constantly. But none of them, him, people on the left, right, it doesn't matter. They don't want to face God's law. Nobody wants to face it. Mm-hmm. Are we going to talk about that at all? No. There's no, in all of his talk, there's no mention of, he talks about leadership, concern, etc. What about the law? Is there a law that sets it straight? He doesn't know anything about it or doesn't care about it, and certainly wouldn't follow it if he knew, probably. And so what do you have? He's just agitating. And people get sick of it. No solutions, no answers, just, I'm going to point at problems. Well, great. You and everybody else on this earth. Congratulations. You have a solution for us?
Yeah, and even on a physical level, if you choose to disobey the Bible, the most successful people you'll ever hear will say that the only color that matters is green. It's not about being born white and automatically having an advantage. Pretty sure white people and black people, both born in poor situations, are starting at the same level. But depending on the amount of money that you might have, that could determine your starting point in life, and then where you might go from there has nothing to do with race. There are millions of poor white people as well. We need to think about that. It's like he's almost making the point that every black person is poor.
Well, he another one of his quotes, he said that if you think you can just work hard and you'll do well, he said that's hogwash.
That's the whole point of this country.
It is. Well, okay, so what's his solution if hard work's not the answer?
Welfare.
What does he tell his team? Doesn't he tell them to work hard and practice? Why? Why bother?
Why bother if the Warriors are going to win anyway?
Yeah. Well, wouldn't they automatically lose to all the white teams?
Yeah.
No matter how hard they work?
Right.
And ever watch an NBA game? Is that the way it goes?
Not at all. It's like 95% black.
he's just talking. He's just agitating. He doesn't know what he's saying. And he has no solutions to it. And so that's the real issue. I mean, so again, yeah, you know, check out thetrumpet.com. It's got a lot of good write-ups about not only the problems. I mean, a lot of people see the problems, but there's some solutions there too. That's a question. Everybody can see the problem, but are you willing to implement the solution?
And the most frustrating part really is the media just sitting there smiling, nodding their heads, pretty much giving him a standing ovation, actually.
Right.
They don't ever question why he's even talking about these things or what he might have to offer instead of just pointing and complaining.
Yeah, I don't know if he's just trying to win over the locker room or if he's what his big take on it all is, but why is it a big concern to him? You know, really, especially when you sit back and you think, okay, if you see a big problem and you're really that concerned and you'd like to fix it, what are you doing with your life? You know, coaching some games, making a lot of money. I don't know how that helps anybody. Maybe it helps a couple of the players on the team. I mean, if you play in a good team, you make more money. Maybe that's how he justifies it. But anyway, I mean, yeah, there are some problems for sure, but they get so caught up in all that. What about the solutions, though? That's the question. He doesn't offer any.
Right. And you're not going to ever find success in life that way, just complaining about things you don't like. I mean, a pretty obvious example is Mr. Trump, who gained a lot of popularity because he was actually pointing at problems that a lot of people were ignoring. But if he did not promise to change those things, then he would have never been elected. It wasn't a matter of, oh, this guy's amazing just because he can actually point out problems. No one cares about that. You actually have to fix them.
Yeah. That's right. Like, yeah, if you had a problem with your car, you don't pay the mechanic to be like, yeah, here's your problem, and then, you know, just walk away.
Well, sometimes
fix it then.
That's the most frustrating thing to people, is if like the doctor will diagnose something but not do anything to fix it, like at an appointment. Oh, so you're going to charge me $100 just to tell me that I have 10 cavities or something like that, and you're not going to take them out for me or anything?
Yeah, fix it for me. So that's, we're going to hear a lot more about that, I'm sure, as time goes on, and that's going to come up in the Hollywood Awards season as well. And which is coming. We're in that time period. We are in the Hollywood season, I guess. And so there's some write-ups about that in relation to politics at the Academy Awards. This is from Deadline.com. They say there's an obvious dilemma for the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, an organization of generally progressive-leaning members, whose show needs support from millions of viewers who voted for President Trump and don't mind what they've seen from his performance to date. In the current atmosphere, how can the Academy deliver an even remotely relevant show without alienating viewers on one side or the other of the political equation? That's the dilemma they're facing, because for all the crying and the talk and the speeches, Hollywood exists for one, only because of one reason. People are willing to pay money to be quote-unquote entertained. And once those entertainers try to become the lecturers and the scolders and the philosophers, a lot of times people turn it off. And if they turn them off, their income's gone, and their big political stance, they can have it all they want, but they're not going to get paid. And for all the talk, it's all about money for most people. And so that's the dilemma that Hollywood faces.
Yeah, and the thing is, movie theaters nationwide are declining in their revenues. They're trying to bring in alcohol bars to a lot of these different movie theaters just to offset the declining income. So clearly, people are already starting to move away from those things. It's shocking just the number of commenters I've seen on pretty much every website saying they're going to boycott Hollywood and never give another dollar to them.
Yeah, it's there's not a lot of... A lot coming out of Hollywood that makes you really say, "Hey, I want to go check that out."
Right?
they're struggling with that, and because of the changing in technology as well. And Grant, following on this, you have a write up here from the Spectator. Another perspective. It says a return to temperance. Are we going to return to temperance?
Well, doesn't seem like it. That would be the hope, obviously. This article just talks about how, really, the media is committing what they call journalistic mayhem. An example is in dozens and dozens of headlines on Wednesday, whatever the topic, as long as it was about Mr. Trump, the word in it was chaos. They put that Mr. Trump's cabinet is in chaos. His helpers are talking behind his back and causing chaos, or he's creating chaos and loving it. All these headlines are talking about chaos on Wednesday, and yet, here is the media just basically stomping their feet because they didn't get their way.
Yeah, I even was looking today at the top headlines on CNN, and they were all negative towards President Trump, all of them. They picked out every little nook and cranny they could find, and then the unemployment numbers came out, and even though that number is pretty ridiculous, but they did say that, you know, unemployment rate was lower. And so they said, oh, he inherited it at a good rate. The one news item that they might think was positive, they said, well, it's because of the former president. Did they do the same thing for the last 8 years? Of course not. They buried every scandal. And people know that.
Right.
Crazy.
Right. It's just completely biased. And this is really a good point as well, how the media and a lot of leftist activists and some of their tools in Hollywood have been encouraging people to go out in the streets and riot. Like yesterday, we're talking about Judd Apatow saying that riot at UC Berkeley was just the beginning. Why would you ever tweet something like that? Why is it that you want to overthrow a political system using basically communistic methods instead of voting the way that you should, waiting until the next turn and then voting?
I think they feel like they are part of the majority. They are the popular group. But what they're promoting, which is riots and violence and all of that. Well, what happens if it swings back around on you? That's the issue you always have if you want to create some sort of a dictatorship. You might have some good years where you're kind of in the side that's winning. But if you start losing, all that stuff boomerangs back around and you have to face it. I mean, they're even seeing that now with all the what's the term? The presidential the executive orders. Thank you. Nobody helped me, but I thank myself for remembering that. They're seeing that with the executive orders. They loved it before, but now they hate it. But what are you going to do? I mean, if you allow those things to go on without checks and balances, it does come back on the other side too.
Every time. And yet now they are stomping around about it just because the inevitable has now come to pass. It's really all about emotion. There's no what this article calls frontal lobe engagement. There's no higher processing centers. Their reactions are all primal, inflamed amygdala overdrive. So basically, people are reacting on emotion. They're not using temperance. They're not taking a second to think, should I burn my own university to the ground just because Milo Yiannopoulos is about to speak here? They just go ahead and do it, and then they express regret after the fact. There is no balance. There's no thought going on. Even when people listen to Mr. Trump talk, people on the left and the right don't like how brash he is, how he calls people out if he doesn't agree with them. And so because they don't like his style, they don't even listen to a word he says either. Where if you had some temperance, you could say, well, maybe he is being a bit abrasive, but at least he has some good intentions in mind.
And really all he's doing is the same thing the left does. They try to bully, so he bullies back. And
right.
That's why they don't like it. Even one of the actresses, I don't even know if she's really doing anything these days, but I remember her from years ago, and she's come out, right, and said she wants a military coup.
Oh, yeah, Sarah Silverman said that.
Really? Again, that speaks to the point that the article brings out about just emotional response without thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Hang on one second. I get that you're upset and you don't like it, the way things are going politically, but you want a military coup? Have you even stopped to think about that at all? Wild emotion. No thinking there.
Yeah, that's basically Twitter, a microcosm of Twitter itself, because people constantly are putting out things because they can just type a few words on their keyboard, hit post, and have the potential for millions of people to view it. There's not really much of a barrier there that would prevent them from doing that. That's what we're seeing all the time. That's what temperance would prevent. Just a little bit of emotional maturity, holding back for a second and thinking, is this the best idea for me right now?
I mean, the idea of that Sarah Silverman suggests, a military coup. Well, what if they're not on your side? What if they don't agree with you? You don't want that. That's something you don't want to get into, but it's just carelessly thrown out there. And there's sort of like this disconnect between words that are spoken or riots and then the rest of life. Like people think they can go out and riot and then go back to their normal life. You know, hey, when we're done with the riot, we'll go to Walmart, get something to eat. Well, at some point, if you break down society, you don't have your food at Walmart.
Right.
If you really want a military takeover, you don't have freedom to go around making movies and be on Twitter. Some nations have had military takeovers.
Yeah.
What are they like?
That's a pretty good question. It doesn't seem like anyone would want to live there. At random times, their internet gets cut off just entirely. So that's not a place where too many of these famous people who are insulated from real-life, everyday Americans would like to live. It doesn't seem like.
No, and there was a story a couple months ago. I think we talked about it, and then I think it was also on the Trumpet Hour as well. And Abraham Blondeau, who has stopped by the way, hello, Abraham.
Hello.
I think you were the one that brought it up. It was where the young people surveyed said, quite a few of them said they would be fine with like a military
right.
rule. And that just, you know, it just highlights some of the thinking that people have. And it seems like they haven't thought through what they're supporting.
Yeah, that survey from some Harvard professors and one from Australia, a geopolitician, did a survey on the young people, and they found that in varying degrees, people support authoritarian governments, a military coup, or and they think democracy isn't a good form of government anymore. And that's just a small indication, I think, of what Grant's talking about. We're seeing not only, as I pointed out, a terrible ignorance of history, but also that the media is showing them that, yeah, democracy doesn't work with all these stories showing that the election brought about an evil tyrant. And then so democracy is not the answer anymore. We need something else. That's what all these stories are really teaching the future generations of America. And with Sarah Silverman, just one great irony to point out, I think 2 months before the election, she was on this huge campaign against the military because her brother was abused, quote unquote, at a Marine camp or something like that, doing basic discipline or physical PT. So she was having all these videos about criticizing the military, and now she wants them to help her out. So I just think there's a whole lot of irony in her comments.
She should get a job at Baskin-Robbins. Flavor of the month.
Yeah.
What's the flavor of the month?
They're changing their minds on these issues all the time. This article has a really good quote about temperance. It says, "Temperance protects a civil society. It keeps the sea calm. It prevents people from capsizing the social order. Temperance is the pause before the outburst. It is the thinking before engaging. It is a trait like tolerance that's sorely lacking in liberal America. There was no burning, breaking, pillaging, and attacking during the Obama years. Though many were unhappy, they moderated their anger and tolerated their neighbors. It seems that tolerance and temperance goes only one way, for now."
That's a very good quote. And why? Why is it that way? Parenting. Where do you learn temperance? Like, where do you learn to control yourself? I mean, if you're 5 and you don't get the toy you want, yeah, you're mad about it. And if there's not somebody there to say, you're going to take it.
and on a higher level as well, if the parents didn't teach it, what about all the police that had to stand down whenever UC Berkeley was on fire?
Right.
What if they were allowed to do their jobs? Would people be so bold in front of the police if the police would actually make them pay for it?
Yeah. And again, that I think that just speaks to this idea that they can throw out all these inflammatory comments, even go out and riot and so forth, and yet it won't affect their life. Yeah, I'll go back to my normal thing.
It's just not reality at all.
It affects things. The life that we all enjoy, in the U.S. in particular, the structure, the order, the fact that we haven't had years and years of wars tearing us to pieces, it all gets back to there being a law, a rule, and people following it.
Right.
You want to throw that away, then you can look at other nations around the earth. They have had, you can look at Afghanistan, been ravaged by years of war. You want to live in Afghanistan? I don't. Not currently, anyway.
Yeah, well, and that's a great point about temperance, and it's obviously a great character trait, but if you look at the history of America, any great American leader, any great moment when there was change in America, it was done in temperance. Martin Luther King Jr., what was his greatest trait? I think he was temperate. He never allowed anger or violence to dominate what he did. He was always temperate, and he tried to work within the bounds of the law. That's what made him so successful. Yeah, as soon as you start believing you can change by breaking rules, you don't create change, you create chaos. And so I think that's what these people just don't understand, is that you do need to work within the law to create a better law and order. Because that's what America's about, creating a better law and order. People have different ideas about that. It's not going too well right now. Hasn't for a long time. But that's the general idea, is that we can change things to make them better, but rioting and just ripping down people and causing anger is not the way to change.
Yeah. The article about The Spectator, another perspective, a return to temperance. Pretty interesting write-up. Thanks for that, Grant. Enjoy your trip.
Yes, sir, I will.
All right. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. Online, we're at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well, and you can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. If you'd like to email us, please do that. Comments at kpcg.fm. Trumpet Radio Live, I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, and Abraham Blondeau. And just want to remind you, there is a new Key of David program this weekend. Brand new. Who is the modern-day Jeroboam? King Jeroboam led ancient Israel into idolatry and godlessness. If you have looked at some of that history, your Bible forecasts a modern-day Jeroboam will lead one of the nations descended from Israel In This End Time. Really important program. It's brand new this week, and you can hear it here on kpcg.fm, and also watch the video at thetrumpet.com, or it'll be on television too. In many, many areas here in the U.S. and Canada and around the world, you can check your local listings for that. And the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. Make sure you listen for that. And the Trumpet Hour Week in Review. All those programs coming up, including also Watch Jerusalem as well. There's so many. So an expanding list. And if you can't catch them all live, that's okay. The archives are online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com. A lot of interesting stories going on today. We like to talk about occasionally highlight just really bad journalism. That's kind of it's kind of what's happening all over the place today. This one takes the cake in my mind though. This is sadly CNN.com. Sorry, CNN, but I mean, come on, you put it up. This is an actual write up today. Presidential signatures. How does Trump's stand up? So they got a signature expert, or a handwriting expert, I guess, to analyze his signature and tell us who he is based upon his signature. Do you think they came up with a positive read on him or a negative one?
My only analysis would be that they could find out that he's rich from how he signs his name, but I assume it would be a very negative response.
Yeah, the expert here, which interesting field, handwriting. I mean, I don't know. They say this expert said that the signature has a, quote, barbed wire fence quality. I don't know if that's an official term from their schooling or they just threw that out there. Adding, quote, there is nothing friendly or open about this signature. The extreme height of the capitals, along with the extreme angular letter design, displays one who is impressed by his own power. Well, there you go. That would be interesting for all of us to sign our names and to see what the expert says. Maybe there's something to it. I would tend to think it has a lot to do with how good you are, like your penmanship.
Yeah.
And mine's not great, so I don't know what they would say about mine.
Yeah, I know about mine. They'd say, does this guy even know English? Like, what is that?
Is this Arabic? What's he writing? Sanskrit? What's this guy writing in? So anyway, that's an actual, like they wrote that like it's a serious, sort of a serious thing. Like, ah, yes, look at the, you know... Does that really matter on any level? This is put up pretty high on their website. Like this is an interesting thing or an important thing to look at. And then somebody else came in and they graded his Donald Trump signature. They gave him a C grade. Strong points for neatness, but he did criticize the current president for letter formation, saying that in Trump's signature the alphabet is disregarded in favor of a seismograph. That's the story. Like, that's what they spent their time on today. That to me is not very valuable.
Yeah. I mean, those types of stories can be interesting. I mean, they're interesting not necessarily in this context, but in other ways. And, yeah, sure, you can put them on your website, but there's, especially in this world, there's so many other way more important things going on. That's just a waste of time. And especially when it's so obviously biased and slanted, but then when how much money went into producing all that, like how much, when you can't even manage to talk about all the other sufferings and issues in the world,
it's just more propaganda. That's what's irritating about it, that there is just so much more that's important to get into than that. And two, it's almost like they sat there and said, well, what else could we find to be critical about or to be negative about, and then just came up with this idea. So that's out there. I mean, it would be kind of interesting to see like what the science is behind it. If there's anything to that, it might be kind of interesting as just just a fun little piece. But to go after the president based upon his signature, I don't know. Doesn't seem like it's a great write-up. You've got one much more important for us here, Abraham, from The Spectator as well. We're all spectators today, I guess. Who will protect Nigeria's northern Christians? I say every week there are more massacres, but nobody seems to mind, not even their own government.
Yeah, this is an excellent write-up talking about the plight of Christians living in northern Nigeria. And just to give some perspective, Nigeria is in Western Africa. Its southern border is the coast of the Atlantic Ocean. North of it is Niger, and there's Chad right to the east of it, and to the west is I think it's Togo. I might be wrong on that, but there's some smaller Western African countries right next to them.
Ladies and gentlemen, he is not using a map. This is all from memory. We'll excuse it if it's not exact.
Pretty close. Yes, yeah. I appreciate the forgiveness.
Yeah, the temperance.
Yes. But here, it's actually a very serious situation, and I think this subject does bring out just how futile and worthless a lot of the protests we've seen in the last couple of weeks are when you compare it to what actually translates to people in the world who are facing life and death. And so Nigeria, it was a former British colony, and it's independent for a long time, but it's been ravaged by religious war, but it's been one-sided. And Nigeria, it's been in the news because of Boko Haram is based in Nigeria, the Islamic terrorist group. There's been a Islamic reawakening in the country. It borders right sub-Saharan Africa, so it's right below the Sahara Desert where there are lots of Islamic populations there. And Boko Haram and other groups funded by Iran have made a resurgence. They've grabbed power, and they've been in Nigeria systematically exterminating the Christians living there. And this piece in the Spectator, I won't go through all the grisly details, but this reporter goes there and he talks to the people, seeing just everything that they go through. Every week, a new village is burned, churches razed, inhabitants slaughtered, women are raped and they're taken away to be forced, converted to Islam, and then married off to one of their fighters. This type of stuff happens in Africa a lot in certain areas, but this is systematically against just Christians. And what makes their plight even worse is that their own government, parts of their own government are actually helping these Islamic fighters do this. The West, no one seems to take notice of them. This is the only place where I could find any information about this plight, and there's no plan, there's no aid, there's no nothing coming to these people.
Yeah, there are places in the world that are just very bad, many places, and the West has had a pretty decent record, the U.S. especially, of trying to help those people, and I think everyone would support that. I think that's a noble cause. I don't know that the answer is to just bring them all to the U.S. necessarily, but to try to help in some ways. The U.S. has done that for a long time. Britain before that did that in a lot of ways. And but yet, the anger, the outcry against, say, the immigration ban, it's not because of a situation like this. Because if you look at the numbers that have come into the U.S. under the Obama administration, they did not put priority on the what they would call Christian people coming in. They put it on the others, the Islamic. And why? Why? I mean, these people need help. They clearly need help. They're clearly being victimized, and it's a religious war, is what it is. Why wouldn't we help those people? It's so bizarre. Nobody really answers that. At least I don't see it come up in the media very much. It's the Muslims are kind of portrayed as if they're being victimized by the West somehow. And but what about these people that are being they're being destroyed in their own homes? The Boko Haram thing, of course, famously, Michelle Obama had the hashtag and the sad face. And I don't mean to make light of it, but it was pretty embarrassing. We didn't do anything to help them, and why not? You know, they're protesting the left, the radical left. They're protesting President Trump's immigration ban, which is a ban on seven nations that are terrorist sponsoring nations. But they're not. They don't care at all. Apparently, I haven't heard anything about these people that actually need help, and we haven't been helping them like we should have been over the last 8 years, for sure.
Yeah, I think this is a huge embarrassment to the West, especially when you realize that some of the policies we have pursued over the past 8 years have actually helped people like Boko Haram, the organizations. And you brought up the hashtag bring our girls back. That was the most the West could muster to help the people. But that's faded from the headlines, and that type of thing happens all the time. In this article, there's a story of a woman. Her husband and family was killed. She was taken. She was captured, forced to marry a young fighter there. She was raped. Now she has a nine-month baby who she's caring for. And she tried to escape a couple times. They lashed her when they caught her, all these things. And
it's a great example of the some of the terrible things going on, and they're probably not, I don't know how much they're attached to, say, the Western media, but if you were that young lady and you see these people at Berkeley running around burning things, how do you view that? Why don't they help me? why don't they do something to help me in my situation instead of running around and burning and then going back to their first world life?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the big question is, are these protests helping people, or are they just a self-righteous feel-good action? And I mean, and this made me her story made me think of that march in Washington, the Women's March Against Trump, where you had millions of women marching. What were they protesting? Were they marching for this woman? For women, hundreds of thousands of women like her in Africa? Millions of women, actually, if you look at every cause in Africa. Women who don't have rights, who are made to be slaves, sexual slaves, who are used as an object and discarded. I mean, that's what these women in America are protesting, and they think Donald Trump's going to do to them. But this is something that needs urgent attention. And I doubt most of them even know where Nigeria is on a map. And so I think this, I mean, and there's a long history of the West not really caring about what happens in many parts of Africa because they're not strategic. They don't offer us any return besides doing the right thing. And so there is that side of it as well. But I think this really shows that where we've lost our way in the West, where having human right causes, all these things that would sound good, actually don't mean anything to people outside of America, outside the media, outside of making ourselves feel good about ourselves. Because the people like this, especially with like the hashtag campaign to bring those girls back, they're still missing. Most of them are dead, or some of them escaped, but didn't do anything to help them. And I think, and these are Christians being persecuted because of their religion. And so if there ever was a cause for America to take up, and for American college students, American young people who have energy, who want to make a difference in the world, this is something you can get, you can protest about, something you can get the government's attention, make a difference for. But there is no such thing going on in America.
And it's because of the fact that they are, you know, as some would see them, Christian, right? I mean, isn't that the reason people don't care on the left? Because it's an anything that even remotely would get back to traditional sort of values, not interested. And maybe there's another reason I don't know about, but that seems to be the dividing line. If it even gets close to some sort of law, traditional law, a law that might in some way point back to the Bible on any level, they're against it.
Yeah. I mean, and wars have been fought over things much less problematic than this. This is like a holy war, like we saw in 600 AD, where you had Christians fighting Muslims in the Middle East, except these Christians, they don't fight back. And what's, I think, pretty extraordinary, and I think going back to temperance, is that they don't allow themselves to arm themselves. They don't arm themselves to defend themselves. They're asking other people for help, or they turn the other cheek. So even though all these things happen, they try to forgive their oppressors like Christ told them to. So if you're talking about temperance and all these things, forgiving the enemy when they actually kill your family, I think there's a good lesson there for people in the West who become so polarized in their ideology that they view Republicans or Democrats as enemies. Well, maybe they should take a lesson from these people in Nigeria who are willing to forgive or at least turn the other cheek to people who are actively trying to destroy them.
Really good point. Yeah, it's interesting. And we just don't hear anything much about Nigeria in the news other than, say, this write-up of The Spectator and maybe a few other pieces here and there. But if you do look at the top stories on most of the main Western media sites, it's all very much focused on the West, which you can understand to a point, but it's, you know, anti-Trump this, anti-this, anti-that. Outrage, you know, any sort of perceived injustice, they are absolutely outraged. How can we stand for this? And yet on this planet, terrible, terrible things occurring, and they don't care.
Yeah.
Don't blink an eye at it. It's amazing.
And they don't offer solutions to any.
No solutions.
I mean, you can
no.
protest women's rights, but what are your solutions to actually right. helping women in Africa, women in China who
well,
are oppressed?
Yeah, and we were Grant and I were talking about it earlier with some of the different comments celebrities and such make. They do not want the answer, because the answer is it does come from the Bible. If you showed them, would they do it? No. So
yeah.
Why are we talking? You know, why keep bringing things up or hashtagging or whatever when you will not submit to the law that will solve the problems? Like, that's all it comes down to.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to, like you said, realize that our own individual selfishness gets in the way of using the resources we have to make a big difference in the world and to exert them in a positive way in these places that don't have the same blessings that we have, or having grown up in a democracy and in a society where you have certain rights. And so just like the Bible says, much is given, much is required. Even President Trump said that in his speech yesterday. And so America does fall short of that in many ways. And I think just going back to these people in Nigeria, they don't have someone to look to for help. And so that's something to remember when we criticize our leaders and that sort of thing, that it's we need to have a world view and to realize what's going on.
The write-up's at The Spectator. Who will protect Nigeria's northern Christians? It's a very good question. Thanks for that, Abraham. That'll do it for us on Trumpet Radio Live today and this week. Have a great weekend for myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turch, and Abraham Blondeau. Enjoy the weekend. Hope it's a great one for you. We'll see you back here on Monday.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.